Hello, everyone, and welcome to Minute 109 of Season 7 of Movie Around Minute, the daily podcast where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the 1995 Bruce Willis action film Die Hard with a Vengeance, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today is Matthew Simpson, a freelance movie reviewer. Welcome back to the show, Matthew.
One more time. Thank you so much for having me. This has been a real fun week so far, and I look forward to continuing.
Yeah, now we're just going to have to wait and see how John and Zeus are going to get out of this type of thing.
Which, of course, they will. We're nowhere near the end, so heroes got to survive.
That's true. You know, but again, when you're in like the movie theater, you don't know how much time is left of the movie. Only when you're watching it either streaming or on video or whatever, then you can look at it and say, oh, well, you know, we're only at 109 and there's 129 minutes here, so we got another 20 minutes, you know, so... But no,
yeah, I mean, especially when it's a good movie like this one, because you're not going to be checking your watch all the time.
True, and also, you know, as we mentioned yesterday, if you're watching this for the first time, you're still a little shocked about the fact that Simon and Katya basically, duped Targo. So, you know, you're still reeling from that. But it's also interesting that you know, John isn't 100% aware of who's duping who. You know, he knows about the metal, the scrap metal, but he doesn't really know 100%. He knows that Targo might be a little bit surprised about it, but that's about it. You know, but it'll be interesting to watch over the next 2 weeks. How John figures things out, you know, how his detective mind thinks.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, we're about to find out that he's figured out a part of it, but he maybe doesn't know about the full extent of what's going on for sure.
That's right, but he's figured out an important part of it.
Yeah,
so you got to give him credit for that. So, minute 109 begins with. John bursting Zeus's bubble and ends with John and Zeus starting to count. So yesterday we ended things with John, or we ended things with Zeus basically saying that he can't believe he's going to die this way. And John ends the minute yesterday by telling him that, well, I got some bad news for you. And today we find out what the bad news is. You're only going to blow up with me. What? There's no gold on this boat. How do you know that? Because I know the man. I know the family. The only thing better than blowing up $100 billion worth of gold is making people think you did. Which, again, is a great comment. You know, this is the line to me that connects, the Grubers. Even though they've mentioned them before and stuff like that, you know, as I joked yesterday, that depends on what type of sound fiscal advice the Gruber's father gave them. But one thing that he probably taught them was, it's better that people don't know that you have certain money. You know, do what you can so that everyone thinks that you don't have it, and that seems to work here. And I like the way that John outright says it. He says it both to us and to Zeus at the same time. You know, making another connection. I mean, we've already heard that Simon saying that he didn't really like he didn't really like Hans and stuff like that. But for him to at this point, you know, John making that connection. You know, it goes to the whole idea of, nature versus nurture.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that on the one hand, these are brothers that were brought up together, but the way that they were brought up makes this the plot of this movie and the first movie interconnected from that very perspective. So I like the way that they do that.
Yeah, I mean, they're cut from the same cloth, and that cloth is, for lack of a better word, dirty.
Well, you know, they both grew up in East Germany, so Why not? Mm-hmm. At a time when obviously it was a dirtier place to grow up. That's what I would say.
Yeah, but, gonna be
accurate. Even though they don't look anything like one another, you know, Hans and Peter or Simon do not look anything like one another, because Simon looks much more Aryan than you would think than Hans is.
True, but I wonder how much
that. I guess it just had. Yeah, but it also had to do with the casting director, deciding who do you want to put in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Said, we can make people believe that these guys are brothers. You know, it's never explained if they're full brothers or half brothers or whatever. Maybe they just have the same father, and a different mother.
Yeah, I mean, maybe. I'm not sure that kind of thing even doesn't matter when you're kids anyway. So.
No, I'm talking about because they look different. That's what I'm talking about.
Oh yeah.
I'm talking about the just the physical appearance. No, obviously, when you're kids, it doesn't make a difference at all from that perspective. No, of course not. But again, it's I like the way that they make this connection between them. It's important because you would think that the plot idea of having them be brothers would be something that you would want to groan over. But they make it into a way that when you look at it, you're like, okay, that makes sense. I can believe that. You know, it's not just, it doesn't seem like a crazy plot point saying, oh, I can't believe they made them brothers. You know, it's like, hey, wait a second. There is something to this. You know,
it makes Simon's whole motivation. The reason to involve John makes more sense.
Like, correct.
Which is impressive given that, like, you know, this was adapted from, I'm not sure, can't remember if this was like a book or like an unproduced screenplay that wasn't.
No, it was an unproduced screenplay. It was an unproduced screenplay called Simon Says.
Yeah, so and they just sort of like, you know, took that screenplay and hacked it into a Die Hard sequel, and that's actually a pretty smart way to do things, you know?
Yeah.
And to add that extra layer of motivation to give John to be a reason to be in the story, I think it's a pretty smart choice.
Yeah. Yeah. I definitely agree. Yeah, I like the way that they do this. And I also like the way that John is explaining to us. You know, movies tend to believe that their audience is not very smart, and therefore they give a lot more exposition than sometimes is needed. But I like the way that they add this in here, because it's told matter-of-factly between two characters, you know, in order for John to basically show Zeus, I know what's going on here, you know, and at the same time telling it to us. You know, again, it doesn't feel like it's something that's just tacked on. It feels it fits
very, very organic.
At that point, Zeus says to him, "Yeah, well, where is it?" And then John says, "I don't know. He must have switched it back on the dock somewhere." Oh yeah, that's supposed to make me feel better. So, what's very interesting is like, it goes back to the fact that Zeus had that bar of gold, you know, all those weeks ago that he was going to be saving. You know, so what's important to Zeus is where's the gold? I'm gonna get me some of that, you know, that type of thing. We're gonna get some more of that gold. You know, if it was on the ship, I'd be able to grab a bar. You know, even though we saw how heavy it was when, or at least the acting of it was when Zeus picked it up.
Yeah, I agree with all.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, the banter between them is great also here. Between the way that they're having this back and forth. And then John says, "No, you're wrong about the other thing, though. You're not going to die." He goes, "Yeah, you know some cop trick that handcuffs. Yeah, you know some cop trick about handcuffs that's gonna get us out of here." He goes, "Yeah, use the key." He goes, "You know how to pick this lock. Is this some black again? Will you stop with the racial shit? Are you a locksmith or not? Yeah, yeah, yeah. I can do it if I had something to do with. So I'm actually going to stop right here for a second before we continue. When was it established that Zeus is a lockpick? Zeus is an electrician.
Doesn't he own a pawn shop or something? Isn't that what his shop is?
Nope. He owns an appliance shop. If you look back, you can see that I think it's called the Carver's Electrics or something like that.
Hmm. You know, 30 years of watching this movie, you're 25, I guess. I've never noticed that. For some reason I thought it was a pawn shop. So it's yeah.
It says Carver's Appliance Shop.
Hmm.
It says buy, sell, new, used. Yeah, that's what he's got there. So where would John get any idea that he's a locksmith? Again, it works for the plot. That I agree, and that they need. But there's nothing that Zeus says along the way. I mean, even when he jury rigs the car in order to start it up, you know, he says he's an electrician. He doesn't say anything about being a locksmith. You know, and again, if he was a locksmith, he would have broken into the car, into the Yugo, instead of just taking the brick of gold and smashing in the window. You know, he might have done something a little bit quicker to break in. So I just think that must be a reason for them to, you know, they just added it here as a plot point because it was needed.
Yeah, I mean,
that's my interpretation of it.
Yeah, my immediate guess would be that maybe they edited, maybe they changed something in production. Like maybe he was initially a locksmith, and then he needed him to be an electrician in a different scene. Like maybe it went the other way. But either way, it's an interesting. I had never noticed that before. I thought it was like a pawn shop that he worked out of, or that it was at least a little more like general purpose. You know, he would need a wider range of skills. So I never noticed that before. Interesting. Kind of wacky. It's always interesting when you watch a film and you've been watching for so long and you pick up something you've never picked up before.
Well, I mean, that's why we do it this way, minute by minute, for that exact reason.
Mm-hmm.
In order to catch all these little things. You know, see these fun little things that they give us. So one of the things that I wanted to look up was about escaping from handcuffs. You know, about how either difficult or easy it should be or whatever. But what it comes down to, the first thing that I found was that a handcuff is basically a temporary restraint. So therefore, it's not something that's going to be very complicated. So an article that I found has four different ways, basically, of getting out of handcuffs. So you have either, you can slip your hands out when the hands are smaller than the wrist.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you have lock picking. You have a way of releasing the pole with a shim, you know, trying to find a way to open it that way, or opening the handcuffs with a duplicate key, often hidden on the body of the performer before the performance. I mean, again, that most people, when you think of magic tricks and stuff mm-hmm. like that, the idea here is that, you know, John believes that Zeus, the electrician, has the skills, find a way to pick the lock, which I guess makes sense for the plot. So we can't really complain about that one.
No, I mean, it's such a small moment. I don't think it matters.
It doesn't matter, but it's the idea that, okay, wait a second, this is something that they're just adding in. They're giving him this new skill. It, you know, the whole idea of a job of a locksmith these days is also dealing with like breaking into houses or cars that are needed. And how many of the, I know you live in Canada, but you have a law that you need to be licensed in order to be allowed?
Like, a trick question. It's either going to be all of them or none of them.
No, it's not a trick question. It's there are 15 states in the U.S. that have certification that you need to get in order to be able to become a locksmith. In order, because mm-hmm. obviously someone who's a locksmith then knows how to break it down, with breaking cars and stuff like that.
I wonder what it's like in Canada, actually.
So it's
probably provincially regulated, I would imagine.
I didn't see a list from Canada doing. But the whole idea is that someone who's a locksmith, they can help you get into your car if you lock the keys inside or lost the keys or whatever it is. But I actually had to have that happen once. I once locked my keys in the car, and I had to call a lock. Actually, I think maybe my mother locked my keys in the car. I think it was something like that. It was a very strange thing. I think that she didn't realize that she was locking the door. I don't remember what it was. This was like 20 years ago. I don't even remember the whole story. But these are people who are able to get into your house, get into your car. So it makes sense that you would want them to be licensed so that you know who they are and that they're what they're doing is above board. Which makes sense.
A thing that there's some consequences for.
Yeah.
Outside of criminal.
Correct. But what's funny is there, based on the information I just said, only 15 of the 50 states actually has that as that it's a law that you need to be certified. So in 35 states, it must be pretty easy to. So John then asks him to if he knows how to get him out of the handcuffs, and then John says, "How about a splinter of that cable I slid down?" Now, what is it? I slid down. Didn't they both slide down the cable? How about that we slid down?
Yeah, it actually makes me wonder if there was like a scene cut. Or a scene changed, because they definitely both shimmied down the cable, and they definitely both fell from it.
When
the truck falls off the bridge. And although I will say there is that shot,
that's right.
Which would have been last week or maybe the week before, they make it to the crane, and then
in 2 weeks
the truck falls, and you see Zeus fall in the background, and John's clinging to the crane, and the cable pulls
right.
him.
Yes, which we talked about the edit that they did there and the way that the special effects don't really work so well. Because you can really, if you watch it in slow motion, you see that they basically just cut the cut the film itself with the way that they cut the guy in half.
Oh, interesting.
Which is really cool. Yeah, if you watch it that way. And what's really funny is while John is talking right now, if you pay attention, you can see the splinter sticking out of his arm, which is probably, sticking out of his armpit because it's probably not really in his, not really stuck in his arm.
No, I mean, imagine he's not in real life.
Yeah, correct. And then Zeus goes, "That might work." And he goes, "Hold on." He goes, "What the f*** are you doing?" And then John starts screaming, "Oh, fuck, fuck." And then he pulls it out with his teeth and goes, "How's that? That big enough?" And he goes, "Yeah. Yeah, that might work. All right. And I'm going to drop it into your hands. Cup your hands. Don't drop this motherfucker. All right. Get it ready. Come on. One. You ready? Ready? Two." And then the minute cuts off. At that point where he does that. But again, I think it's very effective. I don't know enough about lockpicking, whether a splinter like that really would or should help. But it makes for good drama.
So I don't know enough about lockpicking either, but I imagine from what limited knowledge I have, which admittedly comes from watching movies and TV, something like that would probably make a better shim than lockpick. In a pair of handcuffs, if I am understanding things correctly. But honestly, I'm probably not. So maybe I shouldn't speak out of turn.
Absolutely no idea.
Yeah.
And that's all I have for this minute. Did you have anything else you wanted to talk about?
Yeah, actually, I really like this minute. One thing that we haven't really talked about is that in terms of the filmmaking here, this is one long take. If you watch closely, there's no cuts. It's the camera is panning back and forth, sort of in a semicircle around John and Zeus. And there's no cuts in the whole conversation, at least before this minute cuts off anyway. And it's just a really great example of how a slightly longer take can keep you in the moment and help you build tension and build camaraderie and just to see the chemistry between the performers. And I feel like a lesser film would have cut a lot, you know, would have cut instead of being this longer moment. A lesser film would have cut back and forth, like done a shot reverse shot type thing on their faces and would have been lesser for it. And I think it's a really, this is a great moment. Because there's technically there's one little cut right when he pulls the piece of wire out of his shoulder. It does technically cut there, but then it continues with another longer take of these two characters talking. And I feel like that's something that can't 100% say this because it's too much hyperbole, but I feel like you don't see that as much in blockbusters anymore. You know, there's a lot of fast cutting, and it would have been some higher stakes music playing. It would have been a lot of fast cutting to try and emphasize that they're in a hurry. And this film, this whole scene is very patient, and there's tension because they show you that they're real people and to build that camaraderie. And I really love the way.
Yeah, I was actually going to say before you mentioned it, the fact that this is something that the way that they have this long shot is something they did in the 90s. But today they wouldn't do this. Today everything is cut. You know, to make you feel the tension more, as opposed to drawing it out, you know, which I like the way that they
do. Yeah. To try to artificially sort of boost the urgency of what's going on. As opposed to just like doing that through their performance, which is what happens here. I feel like, again, it's not 100%, but I think but we don't get this as much as we used to. And I really appreciate it when it shows up now.
Yeah, I completely agree with you on that. Definitely. All right. Did you have anything else you want to say about this minute?
No, that was the main thing.
Okay. Well, once again, nothing to talk about in the script. So every Thursday we have a segment called Off the Beaten Track, Revenge Sibling Rivalry Edition, where my guests leave some sort of story, anecdote, adventure, misadventure, something that's happened to them over the course of their life that is related to either sibling rivalry or revenge or something like that. So, Matthew, you have some sort of story for us?
So, I mean, I don't have a lot of good stories on this theme, I'm not going to lie. And not because my sister and I were, like, best of friends, because we definitely weren't for a long period when we were children. But I just don't, like, none of the stories are very good. The one thing I'll say is that my sister and I were best friends when we were children, and we're basically best friends now. But when we were teenagers, we kind of hated each other. And I think a lot of it has to do just with the fact that I was the older child and I took, you know, the brunt of my parents' practice, and she was much better at the game. And she knew that. And so, like, the few times in my life where I was able to sort of turn things around on her, and I don't want to dish too much tea here, but, like, there were a couple of times where I was able to sort of, like, turn things around on her. Not by necessarily ratting her out, but by, say, you know, just letting her talk her way into her own trouble, either by, you know, taking our father's car or some other, doing something like that, were very satisfying. But I don't have a good story that I can share because it was too long ago and it's a little too personal. And I like my sister. Okay. I don't want to get in trouble
with her. Does she listen?
Honestly, if she knows I'm on the show, she probably will. Yeah, she's very supportive.
Nah. Okay. That's good. That's very good. All right. So thank you very much for that story. And keep the personal stuff to yourself. That's fine.
Sorry, I don't have a really dramatic one. Like, I was trying to think of one, but I just don't really have one. So sorry about that.
Okay. That's perfectly okay. All right, so Matthew, why don't you once again tell us Where can people find Matthew Simpson?
Yeah, so the easiest way to find me, I am a freelance writer and podcaster. You can find links to all my stuff on my personal website, which is stretched.ca. I link out to everything I write and all of my podcast appearances, including these ones and past appearances on this show for Die Hard and Die Hard 2. You can also find the Awesome Friday podcast, in which me and my friend and co-host Simon talk about two new movies every week. At the time we're recording this, the most recent episode we've recorded was on A Quiet Place, Part 1, and Deadpool and Wolverine, so that's a pretty good one. Especially since our opinions are maybe not what you would expect from a couple of comic book nerds. So I encourage you to go find that on any platform that you find podcasts. You should be able to find it. And last but not least, you can find me on, again, all the socials that matter. You can find me at MatthewAF.
All right. And finding me is very simple. Just to search for Movie Rob Minute. If you want to send me an email, you can send it to movierobminute@movierob.net. If you want, you can find me on Instagram. You can find me on Twitter. You can find me on Facebook or on my website, movierobminute.com. So, Matthew, you feel like coming back tomorrow to figure out what happens with this splinter?
Oh, can't wait.
All right. So, until tomorrow, yippee-ki-yay.
Yippee-ki-yay.
Tony comes marching home again. Hurrah, hurrah. We'll give him a hearty welcome then. Hurrah, hurrah. The men will cheer, the boys will shout, the ladies, they will all turn out, and we'll all feel glad when Johnny comes marching home.